Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the story of Shirley Sherrod, the fired Agriculture Department official, is continuing to evolve this morning. If you've been following this, you may not know that Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack's office issued a press release around 2 a.m. today indicating they would consider taking her back. Sherrod was forced to resign on Monday after a two-minute excerpt was released from a speech that she gave at the NAACP Freedom Fund banquet in March. In the speech, she referred to an incident when she was an activist for poor black farmers in 1986 in Georgia, in which she said she first withheld her full efforts from a poor white farmer because her mission was to help poor black farmers. That was considered racist enough that she lost her job and was condemned for the remarks this week by the NAACP itself. But now it's beginning to look like the tape was misleadingly excerpted by the conservative activist Andrew Breitbart, who was also involved in the highly edited Acorn Sting videos. So now the NAACP has released the complete tape of Sherrod's 43-minute speech, and Secretary Vilsack is reconsidering her sacking. We've put a link to the full speech on our website, and we will now play a 5-minute excerpt that includes the remark about her original attitude toward the white farmer in 1986, but puts it into fuller context. This begins with her talking about her love of God and her work with the struggling white farmer.
When I made the commitment years ago, I didn't know how. I prayed about it that night, and as our house filled with people, I was back in one of the bedrooms praying and asking God to show me what I could do. I didn't have the path wasn't laid out that night. I just made the decision that I would stay and work. And over the years, things just happened. And young people, I want you to know that when you're true to what God wants you to do, the path just opens up and things just come to you, you know. God is good, I can tell you that.
Amen.
When I made that commitment, I was making that commitment to black people and to black people only. But you know, God will show you things and he'll put things in your path so that you realize that the struggle is really about poor people.
All right, all right.
You know, the first time I was faced with having to help a white farmer save his farm, he took a long time talking, but he was trying to show me he was superior to me.
Right.
I knew what he was doing, but he had come to me for help.
Mm-hmm.
What he didn't know while he was taking all that time trying to show me he was superior to me was I was trying to decide just how much help I was going to give him. I was struggling with the fact that so many black people have lost their farmland, and here I was faced with having to help a white person save their land. So I didn't give him the full force of what I could do. I did enough so that when I assumed the Department of Agriculture had sent him to me, either that or the Georgia Department of Agriculture. And he needed to go back and report that I did try to help him. So I took him to a white lawyer that we had that had attended some of the training that we had provided, because Chapter 12 bankruptcy had just been enacted for the family farmer. So I figured if I take him to one of them, that his own kind would take care of him. That's when it was revealed to me that y'all, it's about poor versus those who have. And not so much about white. It is about white and black, but it's not, You know, it opened my eyes because I took him to one of his own. And I put him in his hand and felt, okay, I've done my job. But during that time, we would have these injunctions against the Department of Agriculture. And so they couldn't foreclose on him. And I want you to know that the county supervisor had done something to him that I have not seen yet that they've done to any other farmer, black or white. And what they did to him caused him to not be able to file Chapter 12 bankruptcy. So everything was going along fine. I'm thinking he's being taken care of by the white lawyer. And then they lifted the injunction against USDA in May of 87 for 2 weeks. And he was one of 13 farmers in Georgia who received the foreclosure notice. He called me. I said, well, go on and make an appointment at the lawyer. Let me know when it is, and I'll meet you there. So we met at the lawyer's office on the date they had given him. And this lawyer sat there. He had been paying this lawyer, y'all. That's what got me. He had been paying the lawyer since November, and this was May. And the lawyer sat there and looked at him and said, well, y'all getting old. Why don't you just let the farm go? I could not believe he said that. So I said to the lawyer, I told him, I can't believe you said that. I said, it's obvious to me if he cannot file a Chapter 12 bankruptcy to stop this foreclosure, you have to file an 11. And the lawyer said to me, I'll do whatever you say, whatever you think. That's the way he put it. But he's paying him. He wasn't paying me any money. You know, so he said, the lawyer said he would work on it. And then about 7 days before that man would have been sold at the courthouse steps, the farmer called me and said the lawyer wasn't doing anything. And that's when I spent time there in my office calling everybody I could think of to try to see, help me find a lawyer who would handle this. And finally, I remembered that I had gone to see one just 40 miles away in America's with a black farmer. But working with him made me see that it's really about those who have versus those who don't. You know, and they could be black, they could be white, they could be Hispanic. And it made me realize then that I needed to work to help poor people, those who don't have access the way others had.
So, fired Agriculture Department official Shirley Sherrod in fuller context, that 5-minute excerpt from her March 27th speech to an NAACP audience. And judging from that, the fuller video seems to completely turn the original moral of the story, reason for her firing, on its head. Not that she's inclined to help blacks over whites, but that if she once was, this encounter taught her not to look through the lens of race with respect to her work. So what's the context of this incident with the NAACP calling some of the Tea Party movement racist and some conservatives calling Attorney General Holder racist? Do all of those things play into this? Washington Post correspondent Krista Thompson has been following this story and joins me now. Hi, Krista. Thanks
Hi,
for coming
Brian.
On WNYC.
Sure.
And listeners, if you're following this, we are open to your takes. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Of course, this has been the buzz of cable television news for the last couple of days, the first time we're touching it here. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And again, my guest, Krista Thompson from The Washington Post. Krista, what's the latest on Shirley Sherrod and Secretary Vilsack? I gather this story is developing with the release of this fuller tape, even as we speak.
It is, and what we know is that the Department of Agriculture is reviewing the situation. Secretary Vilsack has said that, you know, they will conduct a thorough investigation. Yesterday, Ms. Sherrod told CNN that she wasn't sure that she would want to go back there, wasn't sure that she could be effective. She seems to be rethinking that. She said this morning that she is softening, and she got a call from the president of the local chapter of the NAACP there in Douglas, Georgia, Georgia where she gave the speech, and she said he told her, "We think you could do so much more now. People have heard you. You could have an impact." And she said that had kind of framed her thinking. So we don't know what will happen. But the consensus in Washington is that a rash decision had been made. And what we know is that, you know, when you mix politics and race, folks just tend to run scared, and that's what we've seen here.
And as of about 6 o'clock this morning, when Shirley Sherrod was a guest on The Takeaway, our morning show, at that time she wasn't sure she would take her job back when asked by our Celeste Headley. Listen to her response.
So I'm not sure about that, because I'm not sure of how I would be treated at this point at USDA. Isn't that something?
So now, if I understand you correctly, Krissa, you have Agriculture Department officials trying to talk her back into taking her job and telling her that now that her profile has been raised by this incident, she could be more effective.
And now, this was the local NAACP chapter told her they thought she could be more effective. But we do know that the federal government is reviewing what happened to her. And, you know, it's clear from the Fuller tape that they got it wrong. As the NAACP national office said yesterday, they got snookered.
Well, what's the NAACP's responsibility here? The speech was at an event of theirs in March, but they were quick to call for Sherrod's resignation when the two-minute edit first emerged earlier in the week. Why was that?
Well, you know, I had a long conversation with NAACP President Benjamin Jealous last night, and what he told me was, frankly, they saw the tape and they were convinced that, you know, she had committed a racist act. From the context of the tape as it was shown, it seemed like something that she did in her capacity at USDA, not something that had happened 24 years prior, which was in fact the case. And it happened at an NAACP function, but it was a local chapter. There are hundreds of these dinners that happen around the country. The national office often doesn't know who the speakers are or what is happening there. And they said that they called members of the local chapter, weren't really able to get any clarity. They got the news that Sherrod had resigned and just assumed that they should come out and make a strong statement because, like you said, there was a loud debate that they had last week about the Tea Party passed a resolution telling that movement that they should be sure to stamp out racist elements within it. And so to have this kind of situation come around where it looked like there was the appearance of some racism within its own ranks, they acted quickly, did not view the entire tape until the next day after Sherrod came out and defended herself.
Miriam in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Miriam.
Oh, hi. I just wonder why questions aren't being made about why the Department of Agriculture moved so quickly to ask for her resignation and did no investigation itself. And I guess as a white woman, I wonder if this wasn't both based on her gender and her race, that she was so quickly dismissed by the government. And would that have happened to someone else? And we've had other cases. I mean, we've had the case with Louis Gates and the police officer in Boston. And no one called for dismissal of either one of them. They called to look into the case and investigate. And I haven't heard anyone calling for an investigation of the government's move here.
Miriam, thank you. Krissa, has anybody called for that? Has anybody put that question in that way that you know of to the Agriculture Department?
I think that they're getting it from lots of reporters today. And we know some context about the Department of Agriculture. For many years, it's been called the last plantation. When Secretary Vilsack came into his position there, he made very clear that one of his highest orders of duty would be to get the Civil Rights Division of that department back up and running. There are four major lawsuits pending against the Department of Agriculture. One involving black farmers who were discriminated against, female farmers, Hispanic farmers, Native American farmers. There has been a history in that organization of not treating people fairly. So I think part of the sensitivity there was to have come out strongly saying that we're protecting everyone and then to perhaps have a person of color within their ranks discriminating against a white farmer would have just been a sort of hypocrisy that they wanted to squash before they even did the due diligence to find out what exactly happened.
Eddie in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, I just want to say very quickly, I think that a lot of times the significant divide of rich and poor gets obscured in the politics of race, and it's just sad that the very point she was trying to make has become obscured in all this, discussion. And sometimes you wonder if the media purposely or certain persons in the media just shy away from that which should be significantly addressed, whether it's education in poor areas. I mean, once you drop race in there, you wonder, who does this? I mean, not that there's not a place for a racial discussion, but the issue of rich and poor, which can be easily seen in countries where you have only one group, there's no way to hide behind, racial politics. I mean, it gets obscured in the politics of race here a lot.
Eddie, thank you. And, of course, that's the point, as Eddie notes, that Shirley Sherrod was really trying to make in that clip, which is that her lesson is that the politics to be concerned with really was and even should have been back then for her in 1986 when this incident took place. The story that she's telling is that was her enlightenment moment into the revelation that the politics of the economy is really about rich and poor and not about white and black. So, Krista, that's a whole conversation that Eddie's right. Once we get past, the immediate ideas here of should she get her job back, should she take her job back, mm-hmm. there's a much deeper conversation to have there about rich and poor and why white and black poor people aren't more politically united in this country.
Yeah, it is. And what she said was she discovered that it's really about those who have and those who don't. And we tend to have these sort of eruptions of racial conversations in this country, and it's almost a year ago to the day when Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates was arrested at his home by a white police officer in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and that became the sort of July racial conversation, if you want to call it a conversation, that we had last year. And, you had these same kinds of issues of class, issues of race, issues, of right and wrong, and it really becomes a kind of Rorschach test that, folks, depending on their perspective, they see it in different ways.
Can you give us a little more context on the Agriculture Department itself? Because, again, part of the context here for the NAACP, as you said, is that they're embroiled with these other debates this summer, calling elements of the Tea Party racist and calling on the leadership of the Tea Party to stamp that out. So it felt it needed to do this when the original impression was left from the edited tape. But with respect to the Agriculture Department, they are also fighting the vestiges of longstanding racism, and some of it, doesn't have to go back to the 19th century to be found.
Right.
So what is some of that history, including recent history with the Agriculture Department?
Well, recent history includes the cases that are pending currently, but there is one that has been settled. In 1999, thousands of black farmers won a lawsuit that ran up to $1 billion, settling claims that they had against the Department of Agriculture, which basically found that they were denied loans that white farmers got that, basically helped them to plant their crops, to stay in business. And so lots of these black farmers lost land. They weren't able to continue with viable businesses because there were state directors, folks who were not necessarily at the national office, but people there in the South making decisions about who was credit worthy or not, and race was a factor, and that's been proven. Secretary Vilsack has talked about that. He was, in fact, in Douglas, Georgia, soon after he took his position, talking about the fact that he was going to end this he was going to end this feeling that this was the last plantation. He was going to get the civil rights issues in order, make sure everyone is treated fairly, close the chapter, he's often said, on these cases. And they've been in negotiations with Black farmers, Hispanic farmers, Native American farmers, and women farmers to settle some of these cases that have been for years pending against the department.
I know you got to go. Thanks for giving us a few minutes as you're covering this, as it breaks through the day. Krissa Thompson, Washington Post correspondent, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
And it does look like, even though this came from the conservative activist Andrew Breitbart's website, the same site that was used to break the story, which also turned out to be at least somewhat misleading, about those acorn workers and what they were willing to do in terms of helping people posing as pimps and prostitutes to not pay taxes. The worm seems to be turning even from the right with respect to this Shirley Sherrod case. Here is Glenn Beck speaking last night.
Now, if she is just relating a story from 1986 to make a point about how her racial perceptions changed, this woman deserves her job back.
So he went on to make a larger point criticizing the NAACP and used it for that. But with respect to Shirley Sherrod herself, it looks like people are looking at her in a very different light than they were 24 hours ago. Ira in Franklin Lakes, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ira.
Hello. I can't help but listen to all of this and what happened and be, you know, so tremendously disappointed in both the Agriculture Department and presumably part of the White House and in the NAACP, and almost taking on a kind of lynch mob mentality, which is, we heard the accusation, let's hang them. Not even a nominal effort to say, what's the fuller story? Let's listen to what she said. What's the other side? I mean, when we abandon that, and it's obviously the political environment, the fear of the continuous cable loop repeating over and over that leads to these this kind of rash decision, but it's so grossly disappointing that our government and, you know, a leading organization in our country can resort to just a summary execution of someone for an item that's not even fully considered.
Ira, thank
you. It's shameful. There's no other word for it.
Thank you. Alan Valley Stream, you're on WNYC. Hi, Al.
Yeah, hi, Brian. You know, to make this short, Media Matters has done this to people like Rush Limbaugh for so many years. This environment has been fostered by a lot of liberals. And, you know, of course, there are always some cases in places, but it's the political environment. Like the last man said, you keep whipping out the race card every time someone says something you disagree with. This is the result.
Well, of course, there was a lot of racism, official racism in the United States, and that's the largest story of race. You'll acknowledge that, right? That
of course, Brian. Look, you know, we're not fools here. We understand the history of America. I'm talking about exploiting this kind of hatred for political power in the other side now. You can go too far and use it as a weapon against the rest of society, too. And that's what's happened.
What does it make you think about? I don't know if you follow or are a fan of Breitbart, but does it make you see him in another light?
I don't read much of Breitbart, but I have some, you know, grudging respect for some of the things he's done. I don't read all that many blogs and all that, I'm afraid to say. So,
Al, thank you for your call, and thanks to all of you for your calls on this. We will continue to follow, and there will obviously be a lot more in the news as the days go on and even the hours go on today about Shirley Sherrod and her job at the Agriculture Department. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how to make New York City a more senior citizen-friendly place. This is on Mayor Bloomberg's agenda. Stay with us. And, of course, the population is aging. We've been talking about the census all year. The census will definitely show an aging population in New York, as in most of the country. And this is becoming a policy question. How to make New York as senior-friendly as possible on the streets and elsewhere as the population ages. 212-433-WNYC if you want to get in on that. 212-433-9692.